Welcome to the deep dive. So, if you've been keeping an eye on the news, you've probably seen all the talk surrounding the recent U.S. and Israeli strikes targeting Iran. And what really caught a lot of people off guard, frankly, was how, well, quiet China and Russia were in response.
Very muted.
Exactly. And that led, a whole bunch of commentators to start calling their alliance this axis of convenience. Some even said it crumbles when it matters.
Yeah, that phrase got thrown around a lot.
But what if there's like another layer to this? Could this geopolitical setup, which seems pretty straightforward on the surface, actually have a much deeper, maybe even an ancient kind of significance? Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, what's really fascinating about the material we're looking at today is the very specific angle it takes. Our sources are coming at this from a particular, and I should say non-traditional, futurist, non-dispensational viewpoint.
Okay, can you break that down a bit? What does futurist non-dispensational actually mean in this context?
Sure. So basically, it means interpreting these ancient prophecies, specifically from the Book of Daniel, as applying to events happening now or in the near future. It's different from interpretations that see them fulfilled way back in history.
Got it. So present day or near future application.
Exactly. And this framework suggests that the current alignment of China, Russia, and Iran isn't just, politics as usual. It posits that it's actually the fulfillment of specific prophecies laid out centuries ago.
Wow.
Now, we absolutely need to state up front, this is a distinct interpretation. It's not the mainstream view you'll find in most academic circles, but it does offer a really thought-provoking way to look at current events for this deep dive.
Okay, so before we dive fully into that prophetic view, let's quickly touch on that mainstream perspective, the axis of convenience idea. You mentioned articles like the Iran-China-Russia axis crumbles when it matters. What's the core argument there?
Well, the main thrust is that, yeah, these countries share an antagonism towards the US and they definitely benefit from challenging the West. But when push came to shove, like with direct military action against Iran, the commitment from China and Russia seemed, well, lacking.
We saw those muted reactions you mentioned. What
Thank
did
you.
that look like on the ground, practically speaking?
China, for example, was very careful, diplomatically speaking. Their main focus seemed to be keeping things stable economically. They even gave Iran a subtle nudge about the Strait of Hormuz, reminding them how vital it is for global trade, which, of course, includes China's own energy supplies.
Right, keep the oil flowing.
Pretty much. And Russia. Well, Russia is obviously deeply mired in the war in Ukraine. That severely limits their ability, or maybe even their desire, to offer significant military help to Iran right now, regardless of past agreements or rhetoric.
And these analyses, they really hammer home the idea of divergent interests, right? And this wildly asymmetric relationship. How asymmetric are we talking?
Oh, it's quite stark when you look at the numbers. Take the economics. China is Iran's biggest trading partner, okay? By something like 90% of Iran's oil exports.
90%. That sounds huge.
It is huge for Iran. But flip it around. For China, that Iranian oil only makes up about 10% of their total oil imports. So Iran needs China way more than China needs Iran.
Okay, big difference.
Huge difference. And it's similar with Russia and China. Russia relies heavily on China economically, especially for oil sales. Now China's their biggest customer by a long shot, making up maybe a third of Russia's state budget revenue. It just shows the power imbalance.
So it's not exactly a partnership of equals.
Not even close. And beyond the economics, the sources also point to ideological differences. Xi in China and Putin in Russia, they apparently have fundamentally different takes on things like Russia's own 1917 revolution, little things that hint at deeper philosophical divides.
That explains why you saw that kind of mixed reaction on the quote-unquote Arab street, right? The sentiment captured in pro-Arab or pro-Palestinian news outlets.
Exactly. There was definitely appreciation for the diplomatic cover China and Russia provided, the statements they made condemning U.S. actions and supporting Iran rhetorically. But there was also real disappointment that it didn't translate into, tanks or planes or concrete military backing.
So from that purely secular geopolitical viewpoint, it looked like an alliance built on convenience that just buckled under real pressure, that crumbles when it matters line.
Precisely. That viewpoint sees it as fundamentally weak. But as you said, our sources suggest that looking at it only through that conventional lens might miss something much bigger, something ancient playing out.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting then. Let's shift to this other perspective. Introduce us to these ancient prophecies from the Book of Daniel. For listeners who might not be familiar, What are we talking about here?
Right. So the Book of Daniel is a foundational text in Judaism and Christianity. It contains these incredibly vivid visions that have been interpreted for millennia, often seen as mapping out successive world empires or major powers.
And the key ones for this discussion are in Daniel chapter 2 and chapter 7.
That's right. Chapter 2 details this dream King Nebuchadnezzar had. He saw a giant statue. It had a head of gold.
Ooh.
Then its chest and arms were made of silver,
okay,
followed by its belly and thighs of bronze.
Bronze.
And then legs of iron leading down to feet that were a mix of iron and clay. And the interpretation given in Daniel is that each of these metals represents a kingdom, a major world power that would follow one after the other.
A sequence of empires.
Yeah.
Symbolized by metals. Got it. And Daniel 7, what's the vision there?
Daniel 7 is Daniel's own vision. He sees four huge beasts coming up out of a stormy sea. First, a lion, but it has eagle's wings.
A lion with wings.
Then a bear, which is raised up on one side. After that, a leopard, a very swift one, with four wings on its back and four heads.
Four wings and four heads. Wow.
Yeah, very distinct imagery. And finally, a fourth beast, just described as terrifying and incredibly strong, different from all the others, with large iron teeth. And again, these beasts are interpreted as symbolizing kingdoms or dominant powers rising on the world stage.
So two visions, statue and beasts, both depicting a succession of powers.
Exactly. And the crucial premise in the material we're discussing today is this. It argues that China, Russia, and Iran actually align symbolically with the first three metals of the statue in Daniel 2 and the first three beasts in Daniel 7.
Only the first three.
Only the first three for now. This interpretation specifically sees that fourth beast, the terrifying one, as representing a power that is still future. It hasn't fully emerged yet.
Okay, that's a key distinction.
Yeah.
So how do these modern nations fit these ancient symbols according to this view? Let's start with China. How is it linked to the head of gold and maybe the lion?
Well, think about gold. What does it symbolize? Immense wealth, right? Supreme value, top-tier power, global influence. It's the ultimate metal.
The pinnacle.
Precisely. And if you look at China today, its massive economy, the global reach of its Belt and Road Initiative, its push in technology, its clear ambition for world leadership, it really resonates with that gold symbolism. The sources describe China as the sort of preeminent leader of this modern grouping, at least in terms of economic clout and global influence.
And you mentioned earlier it's the economic lifeline for the others.
Absolutely. Critical point. China buying 90% of Iran's oil, being Russia's key economic partner, that financial power, that ability to sustain the others economically without necessarily engaging militarily, fits perfectly with gold representing immense wealth and foundational influence.
So the gold provides the economic foundation.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
What about Russia? The sources link it to the chest and arms of silver and the bear. What's the symbolism there?
Silver, well, it's valuable, very strong, but it's generally seen as subordinate to gold. It often points towards significant military strength or strategic capability rather than pure economic dominance.
Strong, but second tier compared to gold.
Kind of, yeah. And the two arms of the statue, that could metaphorically suggest a dual focus or reach. Now look at Russia, huge military, vast territory, lots of resources. That aligns with silver's strength.
And the two arms.
The sources suggest maybe that represents Russia's simultaneous engagement in Eastern Europe, you know, the war in Ukraine, pressure on its neighbors, and its strategic involvement in the Middle East, sort of fighting on two fronts or projecting power in two main directions.
And the bear from Daniel 7. That seems pretty direct, given the common symbol for Russia.
It does seem like a clear fit, doesn't it? The bear is often seen as representing Russia's strength, maybe its territorial ambitions, its sheer size and power. And like silver, Russia acts as an economic lifeline to Iran, too, but more through things like military equipment sales, providing strategic capability. It enables Iran militarily, consistent with that silver idea of strategic might.
Okay, that lines up. Now, Iran.
Right.
Linked to the belly and thighs of bronze and the leopard with wings. Bronze. What does that signify?
Bronze, in ancient times, was the metal of warfare, helmets, shields, weapons. It's durable, strong, associated with military might. So, symbolically, it points to a power known for its military or maybe its ideological reach and impact.
And how does that fit Iran?
Well, think about Iran's role in the Middle East. It wields significant regional influence, not just through its own military, but through this wide network of proxy forces, Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, militias in Iraq and Syria, Hamas in Gaza. They use asymmetric warfare, drones, missiles to project power and challenge rivals way beyond their own borders. That fits the bronze characteristic of military and ideological force projection.
It's like this pervasive influence, this network.
Exactly. It extends far. And then you have the leopard from Daniel 7. Leopards are known for being swift, cunning, maybe striking unexpectedly.
And the wings. Four wings, you said.
Yes. Four wings and four heads on the leopard in Daniel 7. The swiftness fits Iran's use of unconventional tactics, covert actions, but the wings, crucially, are interpreted here as symbolizing Iran's religious dimension, its foundational nature as an Islamic republic.
Ah, the theocracy.
Precisely. Its mission isn't just political or military. It's rooted in exporting its version of the Islamic revolution. This religious ideology is what fuels and empowers its axis of resistance, allowing its influence to, well, fly far beyond its geographical borders. It's the engine behind its reach.
So the wings represent the expansive religious and ideological drive. Okay, so let's circle back then. We have this Danielic framework. China is gold lion, Russia is silver bear, Iran is bronze leopard.
Right.
How does this change the view of that crumbling axis we started with?
It changes it completely. The sources, like the Danielic view of the Iran-China-Russia axis, argue that if you judge this alignment based on whether it looks like, say, NATO, you're fundamentally misunderstanding it, at least through this prophetic lens.
Because it's not supposed to be a mutual defense pact.
Exactly. The symbolism of the metals and beasts doesn't point to an alliance where everyone jumps in militarily to defend everyone else. It suggests something different, a highly functional economic and strategic alignment where each power plays a specific, distinct role based on its symbolic nature.
So China provides the money, the economic foundation, the gold.
Right. Not direct military protection. Russia provides strategic cooperation, military tech, arms sales, the silver, the enabling might, but again, not necessarily direct intervention on the ground.
And Iran. The bronze and the leopard.
Iran is seen as the power that projects itself militarily and ideologically. It's designed, in this view, to be a forceful entity in its own right, using the enablement from the others rather than relying on them for direct defense, like, say, Israel relies on the U.S. in some ways.
Okay, so the muted reactions from China and Russia during the recent strikes, from this perspective, that wasn't a failure.
Not at all. It was actually them playing their prophesied roles, providing economic support, perhaps some strategic background help, but not stepping in militarily because that's not what gold and silver do in this specific structure. It's functioning as designed, according to this interpretation, serving what the sources see as God's intention, not just human convenience.
And that leads to another really critical point made in the source material, doesn't it? About the lack of a certain threat.
Yes, absolutely crucial. Why weren't China and Russia compelled to intervene more forcefully? Because fundamentally, there was no real credible threat of a full-scale U.S. ground invasion of Iran.
Right. You look at the U.S. public opinion, something like 85% against a ground war, people citing war exhaustion, fear of casualties, distrust of the whole military-industrial complex. That's overwhelming opposition.
Overwhelming. And you add to that the deep divisions in the U.S. Congress. There was virtually no political appetite in Washington for a ground invasion or forcing regime change militarily in Iran. It just wasn't realistically on the table.
So if a ground invasion wasn't going to happen anyway,
then China and Russia didn't need to act like a traditional military alliance providing a defense shield. Their roles, the gold and silver roles of economic and strategic enablement for Iran's own bronze leopard power projection, were sufficient for the actual situation. It aligns perfectly from this viewpoint.
So wrapping this deep dive up, the core conclusion from this particular perspective is quite striking. It suggests the China-Russia-Iran axis, as it currently exists, isn't just a temporary political arrangement.
No, it suggests it's actually the fulfillment right now of these ancient prophecies from Daniel 2 and 7, each nation playing its distinct symbolic part.
China, with its economic dominance, the gold, the lion. Russia, with its strategic and military cooperation, the silver, the bear. And Iran projecting its own ideological and military force across the region, the bronze, the leopard with wings.
That's the picture painted by this interpretation. And remember, it emphasizes that these are just the first three powers described in those visions. The prophecies also speak very clearly about a powerful fourth beast, a fourth kingdom.
Right, the terrifying one with iron teeth.
Exactly. And that power, according to this futurist view, is still considered future. It's yet to fully rise onto the world stage.
Which leaves us with a pretty profound thought to consider. If this perspective holds weight, if these current alignments really are reflecting Daniel's visions, What events, what signs should we perhaps be looking for that might signal the emergence, the rise of that prophesied fourth beast?